conflict in Eastern Congo has affected just about everybody across the families, women, children, and unarmed men. And these people have lost not just the opportunity to go to school, but their houses have been burned down, some of them. And some of them have been in the camps for quite a long time. And at this time, when we are looking at when they return back home, they will need, of course, clean water. They will need education for the children. They will need women who have been sexually violated. They will need to continue with their medical assistance, psychological assistance. Meanwhile, we still have fresh displacements coming from the attacks by the FDLR. These people who are freshly displaced, they said 8 million will be going to most of these, and they need to be assisted.
Do you think this is mainly the work of Hutu rebel militias who themselves have been on the run, or are there other rebel and ethnic groups also involved in the new fighting?
It's a mixed situation. I think the majority of attacks are by the FDLR, but also there are Congolese elements, the militia elements within the Eastern Congo, who are also destabilizing the people. And these armed groups, it's very difficult to control them. The areas are vast, inaccessible, roads are very poor, and it's just impossible in many cases.
Have there been some positive developments? Has the UN been able to prevent some of the mass atrocities from being committed by both government soldiers and rebel groups?
Well, I think that is a question for the UN peacekeeper to answer. But I think there are some positive situations. For example, the escort that they provide to humanitarian communities is very critical for us to access displaced people. In some places where UNHCR has just opened an office, you cannot go there on your own. And MONUC has been very, very helpful to make sure that we arrive there safely, to make sure that the distribution of assistance is conducted properly, and then to make sure that staff that are doing that work are protected as well.
Where will the bulk of the $38 million be coming from, and how will it be delivered to the camps?
This money comes from the pool fund, and different donors make contributions. And the delivery of this money goes to different UN agencies. The majority of it will be going to assisting displaced people and their families.
Will it be airlifted in, or how do you expect it to arrive?
Because the Congo is highly inaccessible in many ways. This assistance comes through airlift. Sometimes where it is accessible by road, it can be transported also by road. But most of this assistance usually would have to come by air. And then when it has arrived in Goma or wherever it is designated, it will have to go by road, but with escort.
Has weather been a problem or environmental conditions been a problem, or do you expect it to be very smooth?
In the past, there have been a combination of armed groups sometimes blocking the roads or even attacking trucks that are delivering assistance. In many cases, it's the roads that are very bad, and so delivering of this assistance is sometimes slow. In many cases, the best delivery would be by air, but that is extremely expensive. But that's the most efficient option because it rains a lot here, and so the roads, which are usually never maintained, get even worse. Trucks many times get stuck on the way, and then you have these armed groups sometimes, they attack convoys. And this is why, again, coming back to MONUC's very critical role of escorting the convoy is very important for the humanitarian agencies.
Now, the UN has estimated that the incidence of rape has been very high during the first 3 months of this year. Why has it gone up so much, and what kinds of services will be upgraded by the $38 million to help in treatment of rape victims and in their counseling?
Well, rape cases or rape incidents have always been as a result of impunity. And impunity is associated with a lack of a strong state authority, the absence of a professional, well-trained police, the absence of the judiciary, and the lack of state penitentiaries like prisons. All these elements play a lot to increase the number of rape, because those perpetrators of rape, in many cases, the punishment for committing such a crime gives them the impunity to continue to rape, to continue to commit these kind of crimes. And this is why, in some cases, you have an increase of rape cases. And also, the more rape cases reported means that the reporting systems have been improved. For example, in the IDP camps, we've been conducting training on how to report rape cases. And so the better reporting systems you have in place means that the number of cases will also increase. But it may not necessarily that in that period of time there's been a lot of cases committed. So we have to be very careful there. And I think UNFPA is best, again, placed to explain the patterns of rape and how these things are reported and how we respond. And so each of the NGOs or UN agencies that have a component for treatment and for psychological help will be responding. And in our case as UNHCR, we also respond to SGBV cases by funding, for example, medical NGOs that deal with the treatment of women who have gone through this kind of unfortunate situation. Because these medical NGOs have the profession, they have the capacity to treat and also help the victims of rape. Every UN agency has a component of how to treat and how to respond. As you know, this is a vast, vast area in Eastern Congo. One UN agency or one NGO would not be able to respond effectively to all the cases that have been reported. So it is an issue that the UN agencies have prioritized, and they respond together to most of these reported cases.
Now, the spokeswoman, Elizabeth Burrs, for the UN Humanitarian Coordination Office says hundreds of thousands of civilians have been fleeing from one place to another. Are they being allowed to leave the camps and travel from one place to another?
When families flee with their children, they're accommodated in camps, some of them. Others are in public sites. And so if they have to flee again from where they are, yes, they have to flee with their children. And it complicates the situation, because then at what stage will you have people not running again, and so that you can give them the necessary basic social services that they need? And yes, it will be possible in places where there's peace, but it will not be possible for places where people are not sure whether they will stay another day or not. So this will help them to invest into the people properly. Otherwise, it is at this point in time, there are places where there is still insecurity, and no one would want to invest money in those areas, because then it will be lost.
How has the fighting on the ground worsened in recent weeks to necessitate the greater numbers of displaced people in the camps?
It's a bit of a mixed situation here where we are now. 3, 4, 5 months back, the situation was really bad. And now there are some places where it is relatively calm, and still some other places where the conflict is ongoing. This is why I am saying there will be need to see how the pattern of the conflict is going, and then to be able to identify where there can be an investment for social services so that the people can be assisted. And also at the same time, looking at these fresh displacements that need assistance, because we still have people in the camps. And the longer they stay in the camps, the more assistance they will require, the more social services they will need.